You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education issue review podcast, the edition covering the 25th to the 31st of May 2017. My name is Chris Parr. I'm joined by books editor Matthew Rice, reporter Jack Grove, features editor Paul Jump, and head of content and engagement for our World Summit series, Tim Savula. Given the amount of coverage that Times Higher Education gives to the persistent gender gap at UK universities, both in terms of pay levels and seniority, you might expect the situation to at least be improving at a decent rate across the board. Alas, data obtained by THE this week reveals that the proportion of professorships held by women has actually declined at a significant number of UK universities. Jack Grove has the story in just a moment. THE's inaugural Innovation and Impact Summit takes place in Hong Kong next week. Tim Savula will take us through what delegates can expect at the event. And our cover feature this week involves some number crunching that aims to identify some of the research fields that scientists today consider to be the most exciting. Using data from Clarivate's Web of Science, we have used citation data to cast a different light on research's cutting edge. Paul Jump has the rather unenviable task of explaining what all that means a little bit later in the podcast. And finally, Matthew Rice is here to give us a guide through some of the contents of this week's books section. But first, the splash this week, Jack, is one of your stories. A persistent problem, the gender gap in UK higher education, and some very interesting stats this week that don't entirely make for pleasurable reading.
Yes, this is some data we've obtained for the sector. And it shows the percentage proportion of professors who are women. And it's quite interesting that at quite a few universities, the proportion's actually gone backwards in the last 4 years. So at Loughborough, it's gone down by 6 percentage points, and at the LSE, 2.6%. Mm. It's quite interesting, given that we've had 4 years of Athena Swan initiatives with various a huge amount of resource and attention has been put on this, but at a professorial level, which could be quite a good indicator for the number of senior academics, women academics coming through into the sort of the top tiers of academia, it's not really making an effect.
And there is a top five there of the largest falls, Loughborough and LSE, as you state, Queen Mary, University of London, Durham and the University of York making up the rest of that list. It should be said the total number of women in the UK professoriate has gone up, hasn't it?
I mean, it's interesting because people might say, well, it takes quite a long time to become a professor and, 4 years, it's quite hard to make a real difference. But some universities have made quite a big difference. I mean, the University of Liverpool, they've taken their proportion from about 16% up to about 27%. And Janet Beer, their vice chancellor, is a big champion of this. And University of Kent has done very well. That's had a female vice chancellor as well. So some universities seem to have done very well, some less so. Obviously, there's lots of work underway, but we thought we'd just give people the data and they can have a look at how their institution is doing.
Indeed, yeah, you can investigate the data on page 6 and 7 in this week's magazine. It's also, of course, on timeshighereducation.com. Some positive signs, it's fair to say, but still plenty of work to be done. Tim, let's come over to you now. The inaugural Innovation and Impact Summit takes place in partnership with Hong Kong Polytechnic University next week. What can delegates expect from the programme?
Well, this is a really important summit as in part of the World Summit series for us, because it's really one where, as Times Higher Education, we're very much looking forward to listening to the delegates, listening to the speakers about their perspectives of innovation and impact and how it can be measured, and how we can get a really better sense, particularly a sense that's internationally credible, about how different universities, we know that they are obviously innovating. Innovation is almost the pulse of higher education. So we know that they're doing that by virtue almost of their being around, but how we can compare that, how we can measure their impact, particularly the social and economic impact, is something that you know, there isn't a sort of a perhaps a universally accepted or really respected means of comparison against between different universities. And so from our perspective, we really want to hear what different institutions are doing, what different regions and governments are trying to use for their institutions, and get a better sense of that so it can support our own understanding and our own rankings metrics.
Mm, it's quite a spiky issue, isn't it?
It is
fair to say. And who have you got speaking here that will be giving their take on what is, you know, an unavoidably important part of modern academia?
Well, we've really got a really great breadth of top speakers from around the world. As I said, the summit will culminate in a session, of, you know, a workshop that will focus on sort of the more sort of meaty side of metrics and data. But leading up to that, at the beginning, we've got the Chinese tech billionaire Charles Chen Yudan, who's founder of Tencent, but since I think 3 or 4 years ago, he's committed his time and his finances to philanthropy, and so he's recently set up the Yudan Prize, which is now the biggest prize, the biggest global prize in education, $8 million every year for two research projects that, as he describes it, have the potential to transform global education. So he'll be talking at the beginning of the summit and talking about why he's chosen to invest his you know, huge amount of money into trying to change education through that way, as opposed to perhaps more traditional means of funding a you know series of laboratories or endowing you know a big scholarship program, for example. And then we've got entrepreneurs, very successful entrepreneurs like Candice Johnson, Herman Hauser, Henry Lane Fox from the UK. We've got people talking about the graduate skills gap, for example, from Singapore and from the British Council in South Asia and all the work and research they do across there. We've also got university leaders like Max Liu from the University of Surrey, Guaneng Su from Nanyang Tech University. Mm-hmm. So right across sort of the breadth of government and business and education, we've got you know really impactful leaders who are coming along to share their ideas and their best practice.
Indeed, it's not too late to join them there. Go to theworldsummitseries.com or click the Summits tab on timeshighereducation.com to see how you can attend. Now that summit is hosted in partnership with PolyU Hong Kong, as I said, and a couple of weeks ago we asked President Timothy W. Tong why the summit focuses on economic and social impact in particular.
The world is facing many different challenges, you know, on different fronts, but ultimately to make changes in society, you do need to have a strong economy. Because without a strong economy, it's difficult to effect changes. Okay? And at the university, many of our professors get involved in research that has a real chance of translating the research results into practical use, and therefore create economic opportunities, create high-quality jobs, and that's why we want to take this opportunity to hold this summit and make it possible for people who have similar interests to come together, share their practices, the best practices, and also to jointly look at how we can evaluate the outcome from all these efforts, you know, in a way that hopefully in the future will encourage more universities to embark on similar approaches.
Our cover feature this week, Paul, moving things along, involves some number crunching. It looks at some data from Clarivate's Web of Science, and we've been having a stab at identifying some of the sort of cutting-edge research topics of the modern day. And does that encapsulate it? Maybe you'd like to take sort of be a bit more eloquent and try and explain what it is we've been doing this week.
It's a difficult topic to be eloquent about, I have to say.
No pressure.
It's it's an attempt to kind of see where the cutting edge of science is, you know, from a sort of more data driven angle. Clarivate, who used to be Thomson Reuters, they have the Web of Science. I've got this concept called Research Fronts, where they basically identify sort of key paper and a sort of cluster of papers around that are very highly cited in a very short and very recent period of time.
Mm.
So in this case, there's a threshold of 200 citations in the last 2 years, which for each research front, which is a lot when you consider that each one's only got, you know, 10, 15 papers in it. That's a lot of citations per paper.
So they're hot topics. I mean, they're the topics that, that people are currently referencing when they do their work.
They are, exactly. I mean, it's not so much that others are referencing them, it's that within that field themselves, they're very highly citing each other. So the idea being that indicates that it's a sort of very small but growing and exciting research area. So Clarivate, specifically David Pendlebury, who listeners might know as the guy that does the annual Nobel Prize predictions every year. He's got quite a good track record in looking at who's highly cited and predicting them for Nobel Prizes. Well, he's the guy that's looked at this. He found basically 60 research fronts that met this criteria.
Mm.
And we, in our journalistic wisdom, whittled that down to 18 that we thought were sort of the most interesting and to some extent that fitted into broader categories. We've got one, for example, perhaps the most accessible one, behind the headline, before you look at things like the Higgs boson and the Rosetta comet mission and that kind of thing, which sure enough are indeed highly cited fields, which perhaps isn't surprising. But there are things that aren't highly cited that you might have thought would be, graphene being the obvious example. New wonder material, but it seems that that's all a bit passé, and there's even newer wonder materials that are now setting the world of science alight.
Yeah, so less graphene, more energy and light, as I see one of these sections is also called. Less graphene, more behind the headlines. It's a fascinating read. You'll find it on page 37 of this week's magazine. It's also in our features section online. You can also follow the Next Big Bang hashtag on Twitter. We'll be updating that as well regularly. Finally, Matthew, books editor, unsurprisingly I'm asking you what's in this week's books section.
Okay, well, the book of the week is Howard Seagull's review of David Labrie's book, which is called A Perfect Mess, which is about American higher education, and from the title you might think it was a polemic about what a disastrous state American higher education is in. But not at all. It's a very sympathetic appreciation of where American higher education is. You know, it may have got there by rather circuitous random routes, but the fact remains that the combination of, you know, access at the lower end and excellence at the higher end, proportions of eligible age cohort to attend Nobel Prizes and so on. So it's very much a celebration of where American higher education is, even though it's got there by a rather circuitous route that possibly couldn't have been planned for in advance.
Mm, the untidy path to excellence is the headline.
Exactly. Yes. We've also got a very nice piece about a mathematician searching for Fibonacci, the Italian mathematician famous for his ratio, and tried to find all he could about him by visiting various Italian libraries and go back to all the original manuscripts. So, sort of intellectual detective story about this rather haunting figure. A piece about magic and in early Christian times, looking at the ways that these things like paganism, Judaism, Christianity, which we always think of are rather different in some ways, we're very aware of the distinction between them. In fact, they were much more similar in their concerns and their use of what we would now perhaps consider magic. There's a very nice piece by Philip Hall, which is a review of a book about a very small area of Devon and just how a tiny part of the country has been transformed by all the people who've been there, both the sheep farmers, but the soldiers practicing manoeuvres there, and how all of them have left their mark on the landscape. And the last review is about where we are with the PhD in the 21st century, which is obviously a question quite a lot of people are concerned with.
Indeed, an eclectic mix as ever. Thank you, Matthew. And that's all for this week's Whistle Stop Tour through the latest issue of THE. You'll find all the stories we've discussed on timeshighereducation.com and lots more besides. If you do want to comment on anything you read, you can do so on that website. You'll also find us on Facebook, You'll find us on Twitter, and you'll find us on LinkedIn too. But that's all for this week's THE Issue Review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.